Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Jim, we start with the good, and it looks like millennials just aren't very excited about the 2016 campaign. Can't imagine why, because the rest of us are so thrilled about this. But no, according to Gallup, they are by far the least excited group heading into the 2016 election. Overall, 69% of U.S. adults say they will definitely vote. Now, when you look at previous cycles, some of those people are clearly lying. But nonetheless, those who are 55 and older, 82% say they're going to vote. 35 to 54, 72% say they're going to vote. 18 to 34, just 47% say they're going to vote. And given what we know about millennials and their hard drift to the left, the fact that Hillary Clinton's not far left for them on certain issues, or they're just not enamored with her, hey, whatever their logic, given where their ideology is these days, I'll take it. It might not matter at the top of the ticket, but it might matter on a lot of other races.
You know, Greg, maybe we've judged these millennials too quickly and too harshly. Maybe they have a little more common sense than we thought, meaning that if you're – I mean, I'm trying to think, you know – I don't know whether I voted in 96. I know that Bush in 2000 was the first time I voted in a presidential year. And we can all debate about the legacy of George W. Bush in your first vote. How'd you like to make your first vote, the first time you finally get this major right as a citizen, the first time you get a voice in who's going to run the country, and these are your options? It's hard to begrudge them that. Maybe some are going to go to Gary Johnson or going to go to Jill Stein or something like that. But if you look at them all, you say, I don't like any of them. They're bad. You know, they're all out for themselves. They're all arrogant. They're all smug. For once, the snot-nosed little punks have a point. And we shouldn't necessarily discourage them. Else we turn into the townspeople in that South Park episode, trying to make the kids choose between two really awful mascot options. So the other thing which is kind of useful is that for a long time, you know, young people – tended to vote for the Democrats and for parties of the left. Obviously, there was a decent amount of enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders. And so there was kind of this sense of, all right, you know, is this kind of a natural phenomenon that, you know, was Winston Churchill's statement that if you're under 30 and you're not a liberal, you have no heart. Sorry, Winston. And if you're over 30 and you're not a conservative, you have no brains.
That's correct.
Generally people over the course of their life, you know, started out on the left and then kind of drifted over to the right. You and I would argue because they learn things. They figure out how the world works and say, oh, those ideas don't work after all. Going back to 1992 and Madonna doing her Rock the Vote commercials, there was a serious effort amongst pop culture to get young people to vote. And more than a few of us felt like there was more than a little bit of a thumb on the scale about who you were supposed to vote. You vote for those cool, hip Democrats and not those old, crotchety Republicans. Well, this year, I think it was over at Olive Pundit points out that we've got, you know, Funny or Die segments. Katy Perry took her top off to encourage young people to vote. And this is not a blanket opposition to Katy Perry taking her top off. It's just an observation. This is a dumb reason to vote for somebody. No, you should go out and vote for completely different reasons. Get your pop culture out of my politics. And according to these numbers, at least, it's not really working. The young people, you cannot persuade them to vote for bad options because you bring out a bunch of celebrities and they, you know, do things and they try to make it cool. So considering how I think this is one of the worst trends in our politics, I kind of have to say a rare moment of attaboy millennials. You let that apathy work for you. When they say, yes, we can, you need to say, no, I'm not.
Little perspective here as Gallup provides numbers from previous cycles. Back when Barack Obama was first elected back in 2008, 74% of millennials said they were definitely going to vote. That's 18 to 34. 2012, it dipped down to 58% and now down to 47%. Even in Bush v. Gore, it was at 60%. So definitely a drop off there. Telling you, 55 and over, they're going to vote no matter what. They go 81, 84, 82, 83, and now they're at 82. So anyway, if you think our politics are crazy, let's head to our bad martini and go over to the Philippines.
We've heard one saying, oh, how could it be worse? Oh, believe us. It can get worse.
Associated Press has the story. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte raised the rhetoric over his bloody anti-crime war to a new level Friday, comparing it to Hitler and the Holocaust, saying he would be happy to slaughter 3 million addicts. Duterte issued his latest threat against drug dealers and users early Friday on returning to his hometown in southern Davao City after visiting Vietnam, where he discussed his anti-drug campaign with Vietnamese leaders and ways for their governments to fight transnational crimes, including illegal drugs. Duterte has said his public death threats against drug suspects are designed to scare them to stop selling drugs and to discourage would-be users. But his latest remarks took that crime-busting approach to a different level. He said he had been, quote, portrayed or pictured to be a cousin of Hitler without elaborating. Moments later, he said, Hitler massacred 3 million Jews. There's 3 million drug addicts. There are. I'd be happy to slaughter them. Actually, Hitler killed 6 million Jews.
He flunked math and history.
Math and history. I can understand wanting to reduce the amount of drug trafficking and use, but wanting to slaughter 3 million people, including just the users, not sure about that.
I don't doubt that for the people of the Philippines, the problems they face are serious. I don't doubt that they feel like they've been failed by generations of politicians going back to Ferdinand Marcos. And there was such a hope that Corazon Aquino was going to change the dynamic there. Problems of poverty, problems of corruption, problems of violence and gangs and insurrection and Abu Sayyaf. The Philippines have lots of problems. Electing this guy does not appear to have been the right solution. He apparently, remember they had the Asian summit about a month ago, and he just flipped out and started saying all kinds of obnoxious things about President Obama. And you and I are, you know, not always the first to rush to defend President Obama, but it was really out of line. And the White House said, you know what, the bilateral meeting is off the table. Sorry, you don't get to, you talk like that, we're not going to meet with you. And then they very quickly apologized and said, you know, when someone compares you to Hitler, that's pretty much always a bad thing. You can't pull out the, look, I'm going to make the trains in this country run as well as Mussolini. So, you know, like I said, people say, oh, could it be worse? Yes, it could be worse. I do kind of wonder if you really do believe that, you know, that, probably the best way of summarizing the current ruling class or you know, governing class of the world is the Davos summit. And I'm sure the next Davos summit, whether Trump wins or Trump comes close, whatever the scenario, people are going to say, oh, my goodness, why are the people of the world entrusting maniacs like this guy in the Philippines or Trump? Well, maybe it's a reflection of the job you're doing, guys. Right. I mean, like if people really do feel like your way has been tried and failed, they're going to look at other options, including options you've dismissed as crazy. So as much as this guy is a giant, glaring, you know, cautionary tale of you should not entrust your country's future to a maniac. And we really have good reason to shudder when he says, yeah, I'm a little bit like Hitler. Yeah, I'm going to be that good. You know, we have good reason to be, you know, really, really on edge about that. It's also a sign that the status quo has not worked and people are willing to, you know, roll the dice on very unpredictable, erratic personalities, just hoping for something different.
One thing to be compared to Hitler, to embrace it, that is...
Yeah. Yeah, you're supposed to react with indignation at that point.
Yes. All right. Back to domestic politics and back to Trump. Crazy Martini.
It does make the Crazy Martini seem not so bad in retrospect. You know, what's the...
Donald Trump got his phone back, apparently. Last night, while most of us were still awake, he was busy slamming Don Lemon and CNN. But around 3 in the morning, always a good time to put out your best tweets, he goes on a rampage. Quote, anytime you see a story about me or my campaign saying sources said, do not believe it. There are no sources. They are just made up lies. Then he gets in to Alicia Machado, the former Miss Universe. Wow. Crooked Hillary was duped and used by my worst Miss Universe. Hillary floated her as an angel without checking her past, which is terrible. Next tweet, using Alicia M. in the debate as a paragon of virtue just shows that crooked Hillary suffers from bad judgment. Judgment spelled wrong. Hillary was set up by a con. Not done yet. Did crooked Hillary help disgusting, parenthesis, check out sex tape and past, parenthesis, Alicia M. become a U.S. citizen so she could use her in the debate? Jim, the media after the debate was clearly going to run with this story for a couple of days, but now it's going to run with it for another 4 days. Because Trump has decided to keep this going. And not only does he allege citizenship fraud, essentially, to get Alicia Machado as an issue, but he's encouraging people less than 6 weeks from an election to look at a sex tape. So this is the Republican nominee for president.
Yeah. Yep, here we are. And it inspired quite a bit. First of all, think about, like, how could have or should have Trump handled the Alicia Machado scandal, allegation, claim there? One response I saw from a lot of Trump supporters is, what, you just believe her? Well, the idea of Trump saying something really obnoxious and offensive and insulting, it doesn't strike me as that crazily implausible, right? We all know he has this long history of getting into these spats with people. We all know that he rips into people when he thinks they've failed him or something. So the idea, you know, do I believe her? Look, there's a context of Trump saying these sorts of things that makes it a little more plausible than it would for the average person. But yeah, maybe Alicia Machado is lying about the whole thing. The easiest, I think, best defense Trump could have and should have put out there and said, look, this election isn't about what some beauty queen says I said 20 years ago. This election is about your future and what are we going to do for the American people. It's about bringing back the jobs. It's about securing us from ICE, you know, blah, blah, blah. You pivot back to what you want to talk about. As I pointed out on Twitter today and in kind of the morning jolt, at the debate, Donald Trump brought one of the survivors of the Benghazi attack from back in 2012, who's been kind of out there as a surrogate. He's in there. He's there in the audience. At any point during that debate, when they briefly brought up ISIS, he could bring that up. He could say, I have Mark Geist in the audience, and I want everyone to look at him and applaud him for his service. And I want us to recognize that we have failed men like that through failure to give them the backup they needed, failure to be, there's all kinds of ways he can go on this. But what you do is you use a little bit of jujitsu. You do kind of, you take whatever they're saying and saying, this is a distraction, this is a non-issue. I'm going to talk about this. And I really do think Americans would like to hear more about what we're going to do with the VA than about what this woman said 20 years ago. I think that's got a better chance of success. He didn't do that. And for all week long, he's been talking about her and doing interviews and mentioning, and he keeps getting into it. And you could tell clearly this gets under his skin. You can tell clearly this is something that he takes personally and he's determined and he can't let her have the last word. And, you know, he kind of goes into a rage about this. And the late night tweeting is probably the best example of just how he has zero impulse control. And so a lot of my friends are on the Trump bandwagon. They're doing everything they can to elect this guy. And there's a part of like, you're working harder than he is. You know, clearly, he didn't spend a great deal of time preparing for the debate. They didn't use podiums. They didn't use a stand-in for Hillary. He didn't do any of the traditional stuff because he knew what he was doing. Well, did he? You know, if he didn't mention Benghazi, if the Clinton Foundation didn't come up, if none of her weaknesses came up, and I keep hearing people saying, oh, well, it's Lester Holt's fault. Well, okay, you can't help Lester Holt. Donald Trump can help Donald Trump, right? He's got to do his job. It's his job to go up there and do a good job making the sales pitch for himself. There are a lot of people who are doing their darndest, and he makes their jobs harder when he goes out on these late night Twitter rages. And I'm just kind of bad. This is one of the, I don't feel bad about not jumping on the bandwagon, because now Kellyanne Conway and Jason Miller and everybody who's jumped on board from, you know, Ted Cruz, all of these guys have to defend this stuff. And he keeps going out and giving his surrogates more stuff they have to defend and explain away. And I just kind of have this continued feeling that, you know, he doesn't realize, one, how damaging this is. And two, he doesn't realize how much he's making everybody else's job harder. And when they tell him this, he just yells at them, right? I mean, he is in his own little world where no one is ever going to, ever tells them, Donald, you're screwing this up. You had a great opportunity there in front of 84 million people, and you lost it because you didn't prepare. You got to prepare for the next one. No. Instead, he just berates his staff and says, nobody should be telling anybody in the press that I did anything short of nailing it. You don't get to overrule reality. Anyway, so end rant. I realize this podcast will go on for another hour. The Trump fans don't want to hear it. The people who agree with me already agree with me. They love it, but it's not changing any minds. But I just kind of want, every Trump fan who's out there knocking on doors and doing everything they possibly can, because they share this, this, I think, pretty obvious fundamental goal. They don't want Hillary Clinton to be president. Do you feel like Donald Trump is pulling his own weight in this effort? That's not a fat joke, but. Maybe that'd be the point. Maybe that'd be the appropriate note to end the week on.
Just three things just rattling around in my head. First of all, do you think Ted Cruz is rethinking the timing of his coming around to Donald Trump? Number two, he's going to get back on message by apparently dragging out Bill Clinton's sex scandals. And number three, and this is probably the most troubling or perhaps humorous, right now somewhere, Mike Pence is drafting a response to a sex tape question.
Oh, yeah. In for a penny, in for a pound, huh, Mike? The title of my section this morning was, you can't help a man who won't help himself. And there are a lot of things Donald Trump could do to help himself, and he refuses to do it. And instead, he continues to do things that are self-destructive. And he does the same thing over and over and over and over again. And if he wins, it'll be a miracle. And it'll be entirely because of these kind of the factors of the political environment, because he keeps managing to make the same mistakes over and over. There's been a terrible, you know, the campaign cannot overcome the candidate. And that is what it has to do right now. So happy Friday, everybody.
We need this weekend badly. Jim, talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend and join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.